most people want to do something. They want to do have be instead of be do have. So I'll explain that. So most people want to do something. So then they'll have something, and then they think they'll be something, right? So in other words, they're going to work hard, they're going to make a lot of money, and they're going to be a successful person. That really just makes no sense the more you think about it. And what we've been called to do is to be something, and then we'll do something, and then we'll have something, right? And the key is the being.
Welcome to the Faith-Driven Investor Podcast. If you're a fund manager, investor, or financial advisor driven by your faith or want to be driven by your faith, then you're in the right place. The best way to stay connected in the Faith-Driven Investor community is to sign up for our newsletter at faithdriveninvestor.org. This podcast doesn't exist without you, our community. One of the things we've heard the community ask us for is help in finding great deals to invest in. And so we've launched Marketplace. It's a new platform of funds and direct deals. Everything from private equity and real estate funds to ETFs. From philanthropic to market rate deals spanning the U.S. and emerging markets. Check it out at faithdriveninvestor.org/marketplace. While you're there, please send us any thoughts you have about how this podcast might better serve you or any questions you have about being a faith-driven investor.
All opinions expressed on this podcast, including the team and guests, are solely their opinions. Host and guest may maintain positions in the companies and securities discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as specific investment advice for any individual or organization. You found us once again. It's the Faith-Driven Investor Podcast. You know, if I gave you a list of all 50 states, you'd probably say Kentucky is not probably the first state that comes to mind when thinking about innovation in fintech. However, Matt Jennings is proving otherwise. Matt Jennings is the co-founder and chairman at Kingdom Trust, the largest self-directed IRA platform for the custody of digital assets in the United States. Matt is a pioneer in the financial industry and leader in the custody of alternative assets and digital assets. In addition, he also manages a multi-million dollar real estate portfolio. Kingdom Trust provides custody for over 150,000 total clients with over $20 billion in assets under custody. Today, Matt joins us to discuss why faith-driven investors should be investing in digital assets, how he built one of the most innovative companies in the fintech space, and what's next for Kingdom Trust and cryptocurrencies. Let's listen in.
Welcome back to the Faith-Driven Investor and even Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. Luke is with me. Luke, I think we've got an opportunity to do this, take this conversation with our friend Matt Jennings a lot of different ways. It's great to be in the studio with you.
Yeah, this is a twofer. FDI and FDE all in one. It's a big day.
And we're going, and it's taking us to a state that you love. Why do you love the state of Kentucky?
The wonderful state of Kentucky is where my parents have lived for the last 24 years. And it's a wonderful place. Home of the Kentucky Derby, among many other things. Home of many large white-tailed deer, as Matt Jennings has repeatedly reminded me of via our voracious text thread. Thank you, Matt.
That makes it sounds like there are probably fewer white-tailed deer because of Matt Jennings being in that state.
No, there's actually probably a whole lot more. I spend a great amount of money and time feeding and taking care of the herd in Kentucky.
That's awesome. All right, good, good, good. All right. So we've never had an episode where we've gone into the theology of hunting, and this is probably not going to be the first one. Let's go ahead. Let's talk about your entrepreneurial journey. Let's talk about what you do with structuring of IRAs. You're a custodian. You've been involved in crypto, so many different things. But what we do with every one of our podcasts, of course, is we try to understand the story of our guest. And you and I got a chance to hang out together at the Christian Economic Forum, where Luke was too, of course. And then Luke put together this great junket where we got a chance to go on a road trip to visit a number of the Sovereign's portfolio companies. And you and I got a chance to sit next to each other for a couple hours going through Northern Alabama. And I heard just an absolutely awesome story. And it was just such a no-brainer to make sure that you got on. And can you give us a flyover? Who is Matt Jennings and what makes you tick?
Oh, wow. So born and raised in here in Murray, Kentucky, a little town in Western Kentucky. Great parents growing up. Went into my dad's business, started working there. He owned a meat wholesale meat distributorship. And well, actually, I started out as a boat mechanic, believe it or not, and then was a pipe fitter for a period of time at a chemical plant in my early 20s. Didn't go to college, barely made it through high school. I knew I wasn't probably cut out for college. So I did the boat mechanic, the pipe fitter, ended up working in my dad's meat business till about 2004, and always had a very entrepreneurial mind, spirit, did a lot of things on the side through that time, but really made the big step out in 2004 and quit working for the family business, kind of left the comfort zone and stepped out. I actually took a job for way less money in the real estate business as a real estate appraiser, learned that trade, ended up buying the company that I worked for in about 6 months after I went to work there, and began real estate investing really at that time. And God really blessed that. Saw just really quickly when I grew my appraisal company to the largest one in this area of Kentucky, and then began to buy and sell, ironically, a lot of hunting farms in Kentucky, recreational farms. And that was where I saw my first true, you know, I guess you'd say like really true financial success. But I had a burden and a heart and I wanted to do more. And that's when I started, founded a company called SBG, which is the Saved by Grace company. And we formed that company to have both a real estate company and this crazy idea we had of starting a trust company here in Kentucky so that people could buy real estate and other alternative investments in their tax-free, tax-deferred retirement accounts. And so we did that in 2009. I put that together. We actually got it going in 2010, and that's when Kingdom Trust was born. And that was built to be a faith-driven company with Chuck and Randy, a couple of buddy of mine's started that.
So you end up being now, fast forward, didn't go to college, a pipe fitter, a bunch of different types of things. You end up getting into real estate investing. Maybe we'll touch on that. But now one of the largest custodians of digital assets and currencies in the United States. And there's a faith story in there. And you talk about being saved by grace as being one of the titles of the company. Did you grow up as a Christian? Tell us a bit about your faith.
I did. So I grew up, I actually went to a Christian school. My mom and dad are great Christian people. I went to a pretty, I would call it a strict Christian environment when I was in grade school. I started in kindergarten into the private Christian school, very small school. And I very much had rebellion in my teenage years against that. You know, when I say it was a strict environment, it was a very strict environment. And so I really rebelled against that. And actually leaving my end of my sophomore year, going into my junior year, I was asked to leave the Christian school. That's a nice way of saying I got kicked out. And so I went to the local public school here my junior and senior year of high school. And I kind of went a little bit crazy, did some things I shouldn't do, and ended up kind of on the wrong side of where I should have been. But to go back, when I was 12 years old, I walked the aisle and, you know, said the prayer and got dunked under the water. And I clearly remember that I did it through a sense of guilt. And I think I was kind of in some trouble, and that was a good way to smooth some things over at home. But I would say between the ages of 12 and 34 or 35 in 2004, which ironically I just mentioned is another year, the same year that I quit my family business and went out on my own. Also the same year that I truly came to faith, and it's all tied together. But I would say I probably asked God to, quote, unquote, save me hundreds, if not thousands of times, and finally got to the point, never felt anything, and finally got to the point in life where I really would just say that I just almost forgot about God. I didn't know if I really believed or didn't. I was having trouble seeing him in my life. I got married to Kelly, wonderful wife, when I was 21. She was 16 at the time.
Oh my goodness.
Neither one of us had a job. So our first job, I made $200 a week and she made $54 a week bagging or doing groceries at Kroger. You know, we just kind of went from there. But fast forward, when we were in our 30s, we had two kids, worked in my dad's family business. I had really gotten off base, you know, had some addictions and things that, you know, not being fruitful in my life. I wasn't being a good husband. And she saw that and confronted me with that. And we split up for a matter of just a few days. But during that few days was a moment I sat out on a porch on my farm and just told God, I said, you know, first time I talked to you in years, God, but I don't know if I believe in you or not. But if you're really there, you know, prove it to me. And long story short, over the next couple of days, some really cool things. And a guy named Ricky came into my life, who was my parents' pastor at the time. And I went and talked to him. And through that, ended up realizing that God did love me and that he'd been after me for a long time. And that a whole lot of the reason I was in the situation I was in was because I was running from that calling. So yeah, so I made a pact to change my life. And that was the moment when I gave my heart to Christ, and my wife and I worked things out. A couple months later, she gave her heart to Christ, and I quit my job because I felt like my entrepreneurial calling was one of the big things that was a problem between me and my wife, because she was a security person and I wanted to branch out and go do all kinds of crazy things like entrepreneurs do. And after that moment, she completely devoted to backing me and trusting me. And that allowed me to, you know, go and try out some of those crazy things, and with her by my side. And so we did.
How did you invite her into that entrepreneurial journey? I think this is actually a really interesting topic that we have not explored fully on the podcast previously. But, you know, many times, whoever the trailing spouse is, if their spouse is an entrepreneur, that person's generally kind of out running, creating, seeing the future, trying to create that, trying to respond to what they feel like is God's call in their life. How did you invite Kelly into that alongside you after her being really on the outside in the early years of your marriage?
Yeah. So I felt like I had invited her in before and got a negative, obviously, response, which to her was just, she was a person who, you know, a mom, she was a young mom. We had kids that were, I think, 2 and 4 at the time. And for her, it was a big deal for me to quit my job and go start a business or, you know, whatever. And so once we came together on that, it was really, boy, I don't know how to say it any way other than I let her know that that was really hurting me and how that made me feel, where I hadn't really let her know that before. And she let me know some things that I, you know, was doing that really made her feel, if you've ever read the book, Love and Respect, right? So I really felt disrespected that she didn't trust me to go out and make a living on my own. She felt really kind of unloved by some of the ways that I was treating her. And what we figured out was we'd been in this cycle of she'd been saying things or doing things that made me feel disrespected. I had been in return saying things that made her feel unloved. They call it the crazy cycle, I think, in that book. And we just had grown apart. And really, it all started with just something small. And what we did that day was just come back together and decide that we were going to love and respect each other. And so she had to make that, you know, sacrifice or surrender or whatever you want to say, you know what, he's the man, he has these dreams, he has this in him, I love him, so I'm going to support him, even if it scares me to death, you know. And so I really just have to give all that credit to her for reaching that point of saying, yes, I'm going to back him, even if it scares me to death, I guess.
That's been a great investment with an incredible ROI.
Yeah, it's been really good.
So talk to us through a bit of your, speaking back to investments, tell us a bit about how you've thought about real estate investing.
I love, you know, of course, I became an appraiser by trade, a real estate appraiser. So I'm big on numbers. I'm big on data. I'm big on, I believe that you make at least 50%, if not more, of your money when you buy, you know, at the moment you buy it. So I'm a bargain investor. I'm big on cash flow, using the proper amount of leverage, not to get over levered. But, you know, in real estate, the goal is to take something that makes 6 or 8% net return, lever it to make, you know, 15 or 20% return, and do it in a manner where you have insurance if it burns, you know, pretty low risk, where your only real risk is, you know, not being able to find a tenant to rent it. I've been really blessed. The town I'm in the last 10 years, I've averaged 99.2% occupancy rates in all my rental buildings. So I do a lot of multifamily. I do a few other things as well. But, you know, we build a lot. The last 5 years, I started a building company. So we build most of our own multifamily properties. I had a management company who I sold to a young man that trained under me. I sold him that business and he manages all my properties. And I found that managing properties yourself, once you get to a particular point, I think it's great in the beginning as you learn. Once you get to a particular point, you'll end up hating them sometimes if you manage them, as opposed to looking at them as a set of numbers. You get too emotionally connected to both the tenants and the experience. Sometimes we try to be faith-based. It's a faith-based company that manages my apartment. So we try to treat our tenants well.
Talk a little bit about what that looks like, if you wouldn't mind, Matt. I'd love to hear just how your faith impacts.
He does all the managing. So I'm really pretty hands-off in that business. My daughter actually just went to work for him with the ambitions of probably her one day managing all my stuff. So he knows he's kind of probably training his future competition, but he's doing that as a favor to me. But, you know, I think it's just loving on them for us. You know, we try to be fair to them. We try to love on them. We try to be, to show them grace and mercy and understand when they're in situations. If we know something's going on in their personal life, you know, with a death or something that, you know, something that's creating sorrow in their life, we try to reach out and just with a note of, you know, hey, we're thinking about you, and just, you know, just try to go above and beyond. And we're always open to talk to them too, especially for new people that have moved in. Cause we do a lot of college students. We're in a college town here with Murray State, home of John Morant, Memphis Grizzly now. So we get a lot of kids moving in. So we're open, you know, always ask them if they're looking for a church locally. We're happy to point them in, you know, a few different directions there. We're not stuck on anyone, but we kind of know the ones that we feel like we'll take them in and love on them and, you know, treat them like we should treat our brothers and sisters. So that's kind of how we look at that. Yeah.
Speak maybe a little bit more to just the tension that you feel. So I'm going to come back and pick on something you said a second ago, just because I think it's interesting. I think it's something that a lot of investors feel as you get closer to your investments and as you get closer to portfolio company CEOs and kind of all that, you start to really identify and empathize kind of with the situation that they're in. And yet at the same time, you know, particularly in real estate, right, there's an obligation to kind of look after the property. How do you hold those things in tension? How do you know when to give grace and when to kind of hold the line? And just love to have you speak into how God's spoken to your heart on that topic.
Boy, that's one that I will do my best to say how I do that, but it's a heart thing. There's a great book, actually, I think, about that. It's called Love Works by Joel Manby. If you guys have read that, that I have looked back to several times when I find myself in kind of situations about how do I deal with this in a loving way, but in a way that is in the best interest of everyone involved, right? So one thing I learned a long time ago is to avoid, I'm a non-conflict person. I don't like conflict. And that hurt me a lot in my early days. And I've learned to kind of, you know, walk up and open the door of the lion's cage and walk in is always a better scenario and confront it. And, you know, based on how the person on the other side takes that confrontation, criticism, then that's when you have to make a decision of what's best for everyone involved, because anytime it has to do with an organization, it's not just you and them involved. There's a lot of other people, employees, investors, and things as well. You know, so I just always try to think about what's in the best interest overall when I make those decisions.
Yeah, that's good.
It's hard though.
Before we get back into the investing side, go over and talk about what you're doing with crypto now, because crypto is all the rage and your business has just absolutely exploded. I want to touch on something that's more consistent with your entrepreneurial journey, and that you've developed a drive to serving other entrepreneurs. in a way that will ultimately point them to knowing God. Can you tell us a little bit about that framework that you're in the process of developing? I found it really encouraging. Walk us through that.
Yeah, I found myself in a really low point in my entrepreneurial journey back several years ago. And I mean, when I say low point, I was at a really, really low point. And it was a mixture, I think, of personal, entrepreneurial, just a lot of stuff, you know, midlife for me, I don't know. But, and I began to search. I started in, you know, first started in the Bible. I sought out, you know, counsel from Christian friends, all of which was somewhat helpful. But I ended up joining a kind of a secular group for businessmen, CEOs, presidents, things like that, and learned a whole lot through that. But it really gave me an idea through that is why I tell you that story. So once I just had this light bulb moment, and I discovered so many things about myself through that process. And so when I got through that, I began to write things down, and I decided I just wanted to share it with other entrepreneurs because I felt many times lonely. I know you guys say it's a lonely journey. I felt so lonely at that point in my career. I felt almost like I was on an island by myself and there was no one I could talk to. And I just have a passion for men who find themselves in that situation. And I felt so alone. I want to be there for those guys. So I started putting this together. I've ran a few groups through it. It's still unfinished. I pretty well do it on the fly, but it's really a self-exploration. When I've done it, I've just put it on Facebook and say, hey, do you feel lonely? You know, do you struggle sometimes? Do you feel empty? And, you know, each time I've had 8 or 10 guys sign up, and it's really just like a coaching program, but we ask them a lot of questions because what I've found is that guys like me and you, Henry, we're not necessarily really easy to teach things sometimes, but we're really easy to challenge, right? We don't necessarily listen. If somebody says, well, you need to do this, I like to figure out myself what I'm going to do, right?
I mean, I have no idea what you're talking about, Matt. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's kind of an entrepreneur. So I kind of go at it from that angle, and I call it the juice because I don't know if you guys have ever been fishing and stuff like that, but it's like, you know, the secret sauce, you know, it's the juice. I got the juice, you know? So I start out by telling the guys that, hey, you know I've got the secret sauce. I got the juice that can set you free from how you're feeling right now. And I tell them that they're going to learn what that is through this, you know, about 8-week process as we go through now. And we start out with some basic questions. And I mean, I'd love to share a few of the questions with you and let you guys ponder on them if you'd like to hear just a few.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So we start out by asking them, who are you? Then we finish that question with something that's very profound. We say, really, really, who are you? Very few of them know who they really are. They'll start trying to tell you what they do, right?
Yeah.
And if you tell them that's not it, they'll start going into what they do at home, right? How many kids they have, husband, father, whatever. Like, no. Who are you really? So that's how we start out. And the very next question we ask them is, where you're at in your life right now, would you say that you are being pulled through life by passion or pushed through life by fear?
That's good. What's the percentage response either way?
95% have said pushed by fear. I've only had one out of about 20 guys that said passion. And 2 days later, he decided his might be fear. But yeah, so we go through a lot of that kind of stuff. We ask them this question too. As entrepreneurs and as guys, right, we're providers and what have you. We're always trying to get somewhere or get something, right? You feel like you wake up every day trying to get somewhere or get something. So we ask them this question. What good is it going to do you to get somewhere or get something if you sacrifice everything in the process?
I like that. Get somewhere or get something. You know, Luke and I have got a great friend named Tim Oakley who says, we're always selling something to somebody. And just there's this concept of just trying to make it happen. So you're trying to get something or get somewhere.
Yep. And what good's it going to do you to get there if you sacrifice everything in the process? And that leads into, you know, some principles around that the journey is the destination. In my life, I don't know if you guys have ever felt this, but I went through a period where I was like climbing this ladder every day. And all I wanted to do was get to the top, right? That was the destination, was to get to the top of the ladder and on, you know, climbing this wall on this ladder. I want to get to the top of the wall and get to the other side, because that was like the promised land, I thought, you know. And so I'm climbing this ladder, climbing it. And then finally I get to the top and I look over and there's nothing on the other side. And I think what so many men, where we mess up, men and women, is the journey is the destination. There is no destination in life here on earth. The journey here on earth is the reward. It is the destination. And we should live it one day at a time, as Jesus taught, one day at a time, not looking backward, not looking forward, living in today and making the best of each and every day, and stop trying to get somewhere and get something frantically. You know, the Bible says, why do you rise early and go to bed late, eating the bread of anxious toil? God provides for those he loves as they sleep. And there's just so much wisdom in that verse. And so then we go into talking about doing and being. You know, most people want to do something. They want to do, have, be instead of be, do, have. So I'll explain that. So most people want to do something, so then they'll have something, and then they think they'll be something, right? So in other words, they're going to work hard, they're going to make a lot of money, and they're going to be a successful person. That really just makes no sense the more you think about it. And what we've been called to do is to be something, and then we'll do something, and then we'll have something, right? And the key is the being. So there's never been a human doing. There's never been a spiritual doing. There's human beings and spiritual beings, which leads me to another question we ask our guys is, would you consider yourself a human being having a spiritual experience or a spiritual being having a human experience?
So this is as you lead them into faith, because I know that there's a good number of these folks, unlike the faith-driven entrepreneur course that we have, which is primarily focused on Christ followers, because it starts off with call to create an identity in Christ. We're right up there. Was curious through this framework, when you start introducing your faith into it, whether it's on the being side, talk to us a little bit more about that. Does it ever, the conversation ever turn back around to you and somebody says, well, what about you? What about you, Matt? Who are you being?
So the first several weeks of it, I mentioned God. Obviously we talk about spirituality, but I never go into who God is. We just talk through these principles and we start going through, all kinds of principles. We talk about learning your yeses and your noes. And we talk about how I believe that we've all been created to win, but programmed to fail, right? Or created for success, but programmed for failure. And so we talk about all those things. And in the end, about week eight, we kind of say, hey, just so you know, all these things I just taught you came from one guy. Would you like to know who that guy is? Because I'd love to share with you who the guy is if you're interested. And that's what we're going to do next week. If you want to come back for the final week, I'm going to tell you who the guy is. And that's when we start out in Matthew 5, because most of these principles comes right out of the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus taught about getting your head and your heart aligned. You know, Jesus said, blessed is he whose head and heart is aligned, because then he'll be able to see God in the outside world. Blessed is he who's at the end of the rope, because there he'll find less of himself and more of God. And a lot of what we're talking about in the group is about getting your head aligned with your heart. And so in the end, we go through and we show them where this came from. And the overwhelming response I've gotten to this point has been, that's not the Jesus I was taught about. That doesn't even, like, I never even caught a hint that that would have been something from the Bible or that Jesus would have taught. Right. And so that gives me an opportunity to then share that, you know, the Bible's not a rule book. It's a love story. And so many people, particularly in my area where, you know, I live in what they call the Bible Belt, right? The kind of the Southern Bible Belt country. And so many people have what I call this wrong impression of God and Jesus. And that gives me a chance to, I've already had 8 weeks to show them that love before they turn around and try to run from it. Does that make sense?
It does.
So,
it does.
Yeah.
What you've done is you've systematically shown them their need for a savior and that something's not altogether right, and that the framework that they had, their belief system, has been letting them down. They're feeling driven by something. They realize that it's not going to the place where they want. They know their priorities are out of whack, and it's not revealing that type of fulfillment. So you've helped them walk through that framework to get there, and then you're showing them a better way.
Yeah.
Just to interject, how do you go from, you know, real estate and hunting farms? We talked a little bit about the gravel mine that you started, which I'm pumped to go see myself at some point. But how do you transition from that into a trust company and what we now know to be, you know, a pretty meaningful platform for cryptocurrency? So maybe just talk a little bit about that pivot and or what God did through that. And then maybe also speak to why cryptocurrency is something that believers should be interested in understanding more about and what the redemptive potential is for that instrument.
Yeah, so Kingdom came about from my love of real estate, and I wanted to put it in my retirement account. I found that process very difficult. At first, I was told it was impossible. Then it just became difficult. And I found out it's not impossible or difficult. So I thought, hey, somebody needs to start a company to do this. So that was the original kind of idea behind Kingdom Trust. Once we started it, we had to become a regulated, you know, trust company, just like a bank. We're chartered in South Dakota. We had to do all that to start it. And a few years into it, I was not the CEO early on, and I was just a founder, and I think I was executive vice president or something, but I was running the real estate business kind of separate from that. And a few years into it, things weren't going so well. And in 2014, I got asked by my partners in the board to become the CEO, which was one of the hardest times in my life. I really did not desire to lead a large group of people. I never felt like that was my calling. That's the reason I didn't choose to be the CEO in the beginning when I founded the company. So I sat at my desk one night and there was two books laying on my desk. I had my head down. I was praying. I was just honestly kind of lost. It was after I'd been asked to take it over. It was broke in a very bad situation. And I looked up and there was a dictionary and a Bible. I just felt like something said, the answer to your problems is in this. I'd ran the numbers every way there was, and there was no way to manage out of this problem. We had to grow out of it because we just weren't big enough. At the time, we had about $900 million in assets under custody. I think we were, you know, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 customers. And I opened the dictionary and I looked up growth and I wrote the definition of it down. And I took G-R-O-W-T-H and I started looking through my Bible and thinking, and I wrote down on G, I put goals. The definition in the dictionary was an object of a person's ambition, effort, or a desired result. So I put down, this was a note to myself. I still have this same original paper in my desk. I read it every day. Have a clear vision and an open mind. Think big and always stay focused on the goal. Then I put for R, I put reward. And the definition of that in the dictionary was something given in recognition of one's service, effort, or achievement. And I said, always inspire, motivate, appreciate, recognize, and reward others that help you achieve your goals. And I put O, orchestrate, arrange, or direct for a desired effect or performance. And I wrote, note to myself, orchestrate a team that is talented individuals that each play their part in the overall performance and reach the goals and always reward them. And you got to remember, this is a guy that's taken over a company without an education, don't know how to run it. It's kind of a Wall Street company, and I'm a pipe fitter and a boat mechanic, right? So so then I got to W and I said, wow. And I looked that up and it said to impress or excite someone greatly. And I said, always strive to wow your customers, friends, employees, and family by going above and beyond to meet their needs. and exceed their expectations. I got to T, I put trust. And this has been the big one for me, I think, because I was, as I said, was a little bit, I had a fear of being a leader. So on trust, I looked it up and it said firm belief in the reality, truth, and ability or strength of someone or something. And I wrote, always be honest and ethical with high integrity. Be a servant leader at home and at work that people will follow toward the goal, not because it's required of them, but because they trust you. And then I got to H and the first word that came to me was humble, which I looked up in the dictionary and it said, not proud or arrogant, modest, to be humble, although successful. And the note I wrote to myself was, always remember where you came from and who put you there. Keep faith and family as your top priority. Always keep your trust in God and others. Lead with love and never look down on anyone. Make tough decisions decisively with care and compassion for others, but always in the overall best interest of everyone involved. Give, help those in need, knowing that the ultimate goal is to see the one in which you have put your trust and what he has orchestrated on your behalf. Wow, what a humbling moment and a magnificent reward. And then I put a verse on there, Matthew 23:12, whoever exalts himself will be humbled and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. And I honestly, I wrote down below that because I didn't have a plan. I didn't really know what kind of plan to have. I put focus on the principles and the performance will take care of itself. And I wrote that night and I will never forget it. I met with who was my personal accountant at the time. He did no work for the business at all. And I asked him to help me figure out a growth plan for the business. And I told him how many accounts I thought we could grow. And we wrote all this stuff out and did a 5-year plan. And it looked really great on paper, but I had no idea what I was really talking about. And he didn't either. It's kind of ironic. I forgot all about that plan. And about a year ago, I actually ended up hiring him about 2 or 3 years ago. He's now my CFO. And about a year or two ago, he came running in my office and he said, Matt, I was going through some old paperwork. And I found that, he said, you remember that night that you came to my office and we built this growth plan for Kingdom? And I said, yeah, I remember that night. It's the same night I wrote this growth thing here. He said, I want you to see something. And he laid down that growth plan and he laid down Kingdom's financials for that 5 years. And they were within 0.25% of each other every year, year after year for 5 years. Mm. At that moment, I thought, oh, wow, how amazing. Because we, neither one of us had any clue that night we sat down and did that. So that's kind of my faith story there and how God came back 5 years later to say, I was there that night. See?
As you go through your growth framework, I didn't write them all down. I haven't seen it before, but the humility, which you ended with, shows itself in all of the different letters. The other thing that showed up was an interest in others. A couple of different times you talked about rewarding others along the way and being thoughtful about others. That came through at least 3 times, if not more. And talk a little bit about the culture at Kingdom Trust. We're going to bridge into, for those of us who are listening, wondering about crypto and your take on crypto, we're going to get there. But I think that these lessons along the way, because what do you have now under custodian assets? More than 10 billion, right?
About 20 billion.
About 20 billion.
About 140,000 customers, I think, and about around 20 billion.
Okay. So how do you get there? Is it a brilliant technology algorithm? Is it some sort of massive arbitrage? Or is it the ability to lead a team well toward an end goal and get them fired up about achieving it? And my sense is that rather than some sort of major financial engineering deal, though I think that when you get to $20 billion of assets, you surely have to have a competency. When you scale to 140,000 customers, you got to have a nailed down shop, you got to have great process and procedure, and you've got to take away a lot of friction. But along the way, you got to lead people. Talk about the culture that's come about since you sat down with that growth framework and what it looks like to work at Kingdom Trust.
Yeah. Leading those people was the biggest fear of my life. I'm just being honest. It's something that I've public speaking and leading people were the two things I never thought I would ever do in my life. So, and I do a lot of both now and have learned to enjoy it. But so I just started empowering people. At the time that I wrote that, we had about 20 employees. We got down to about maybe 4 that we kept through that. We had a lot of people in the wrong bus. We had a lot of people in the wrong seats on the bus when I came in. And we had a lot of people that didn't buy into the change that I was making, because we changed everything about the company after that. And it was one of the more difficult times in my life. But over about a 4 or 5 month period, we maneuvered everybody around and went from 20 employees to about 25, but only kept 4 of the original 20. And the 4 that we kept, are 3 of them are still there today. And man, they're my posse. You know, like, we've been in the trenches together, and they have been and will be greatly rewarded, particularly when we choose one day to exit. And I've tried to reward them. But we also had a lot that came in that original 20-something that I hired back. Most of those are all still there. We've got about 120, I think, now, 150, somewhere in there. So, man, I've just always tried to love them. We have Friday morning meetings, and I always try to share something with them in that meeting that's totally nothing to do with work, and be vulnerable and open and transparent as I possibly can. And be someone, as I said in the T, someone that they will follow because they trust me. Not because they think I'm right, not because they think they have to or else, you know, they'll get fired or whatever. Someone that they will get behind me and follow me into this crazy market that we've went into that pretty much nobody in Murray, Kentucky understands or knows about until they come into work for us. We're the only company in that type of industry here. So they all learn in-house. But they come in and they will follow because they trust me. And now it's not only just me, it was me then. Now it's because they trust the other people. And, you know, since then I've moved to chairman. About a year ago, we hired a young guy, very successful guy named Ryan Radloff, who started a company called CoinShares over in Europe. It's now a publicly traded company, kind of similar to what we do, but over in Europe. He's now the CEO, and I stepped back from that CEO, and now he leads the charge. Very faith-driven, very driven guy, and now he's the guy that they really follow on a day-to-day basis, and they trust him, and they believe in him and what we do. And so we made the switch into crypto in 2015. We actually started cussing crypto in 2016. We became the first regulated financial institution in America to custody Bitcoin and crypto. Some people say we were the first regulated financial institution in the world. I've never done the data research on the world. I know for positive we were the very first one in the United States. And with that has come a lot of blessings and a lot of challenges. In the early days, we definitely, you know, had a bullseye on our back when we chose to step out on that limb.
I'd love to just maybe have you wrap. We always try to kind of wrap with how God is speaking to you now, Matt, and what you believe he'd have you share with the audience that you haven't already shared. You're a winsome guy who's had a lot of wonderful experiences and a lot of success, and in many ways, an unlikely road, and just, you know, moving into trust and crypto, just as you talk through. But what has God put on your heart recently? And what would you leave our listeners with?
Well, we're talking to entrepreneurs. So I think the first thing would just be encouragement, that I look back through my entrepreneurial experiences, and there's been ups, there's been downs, there's been some really high highs and some really low lows. And what I figured out was there was many times that I felt like God wasn't speaking to me. And looking back, I know now it's because I was doing all the talking. And listen, you know, there's be still and know that I am God. You know, I would say when you're in the tough spots, listen to, you know, God and the people who are unbiased and love you all around you. That would be number one. And the other one would be a question that I ask my guys kind of goes along with questions I were asking earlier is, what does wealth really mean to you? And really, really sit down and think, like, really, what does wealth mean to you? You know, and I'll tell you what it means to me. To me, wealth means all my needs are met physically, emotionally, relationally, everything, right? Like all my needs are met and they're met abundantly. That's what wealth means to me. But I would challenge each person to think about, what does wealth mean to you? I hope it's so much more than money to the guys, you know, and gals that are listening to this. And once you kind of think about what is wealth to you, then are you really pursuing and chasing true wealth? Or are you chasing something else? Right. So that would be my kind of my challenge to everybody.
That's a very good word.
Yeah.
Matt, thank you for your friendship, your encouragement. Thank you for getting out there and amidst all the different things you've got going on, actually pouring in the lives of these 20 men, because I know how much you've grown, how much you've scaled. Most people in your position would say, I just don't have the time. And yet you've done that. You've been really intentional about getting folks involved. And that's encouragement to me. It's encouragement to Luke. And we're grateful to partner with you in the ministry.
Yeah, I'd just like to say too, before I get off here, guys, is that for years I ran a faith-driven company and I did not know a single other faith-driven entrepreneur other than myself and my two buddies. And I think that's one reason that my journey seems so lonely at times. And I found you guys just, you know, 6 months ago, whatever it's been now. And I honestly just wake up every day more encouraged through that. And, you know, I've signed up for one of your classes with, you know, I don't remember who I signed up with, the leader. I just kind of did any, mini, miny, mo. But I'm super excited about doing that. But I'm so pumped and excited to see, Henry, that God gave you the vision to go out and reach guys like me. And I have the same vision in many ways, but honestly, I did not know how to move that vision forward. And it's so cool. The first time I went to your website, I got tears in my eyes and was just like, why haven't I seen this before? You know, and because what you guys are putting together there is amazing. So kudos to you guys for what you're putting together.
It's a great encouragement. It's a great encouragement.
It is, Matt. That's awesome. So we're going to put you in a cohort with a bunch of other guys that all just, we try to keep it above those that have above $20 billion in custodial assets. And so you're going to love this group of people. It'll be you and yourself. We got a great group. We got a great cohort starting. I think we've got 500 or 600 people going through FD groups. If you're listening to this right now and you're interested in joining a group to process how God is working through you and your entrepreneurial life or your investing life along with people like Matt, please check out the website. Matt, thank you for blessing our audience. Thank you for blessing Luke and I in a new friendship. And looking forward to more road trips with you, brother.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. We're very, very grateful for the opportunity to serve the larger faith-driven investor community. Hey, the best way for you to stay connected is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at faithdriveninvestor.org. And while you're there, we of course want to hear from you. We derive great joy from interacting with many of you, and it's been very rewarding to see people join the discussion now from all around the world. But it's also very important to us that you feel like this is your show and that you'll help make it something that best equips you on your journey, one that you're proud of and one that you'll share with others. This podcast, it wouldn't be possible without the help from many of our friends, executive producer Justin Foreman, program director Johnny Wills, music by Carl Kegwell. You can see and hear more of his work at summerdregs.com. And audio and editing by Richard Barley of Cornerstone Church in San Francisco.